Welcome to Mighty Parenting, the podcast with real, raw, and relevant talk about raising teens and parenting young adults. Here are your hosts, Judy Davis and Sandy Fowler.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting. I am Judy Davis, and I'm here with my co-host and partner in crime, Sandy Fowler. And I'm excited because this week we're going to be exploring a topic that when we think about parenting may not even come across our mind. I know for sure it doesn't get enough consideration by me, and certainly it is ignored often in the media. So today's topic is forgiveness.
Yeah, you know, Judy, it's interesting that you talk about that idea of what we pay attention to, and we get these hot button issues that everybody's focused on. And I do not hear people talking about forgiveness, except maybe as kind of, you know, an afterthought type of thing. So I'm excited because today's guest is going to change that for us. His name is Cliff Edwards, and he writes books and produces processes and programs that help people become more self-aware, more self-loving, more confident. He is the author of The Forgiveness Handbook, A Simple Guide to Freedom of the Mind and Heart. He developed the Liberate Process, and along with transformational leader Debbie Ford, Cliff co-founded the Ford Institute for Integrative Coaching. So basically, Cliff uses his expertise to help people like us become more self-aware, self-loving, and confident, because that gives us greater success, more freedom, better relationships, and basically just a more profound sense of joy and fulfillment in our lives. So Cliff, I'm really excited. I know Judy's excited to have you here. Thank you for joining us on Mighty Parenting today.
Oh, I'm thrilled to be here. And I love to talk about this topic. So thank you for giving me the opportunity to do so with you and your listeners.
Hey, well, Cliff, I am so excited to jump right in because I'm really intrigued with this idea of forgiveness in our families. And as the expert, I would love to have you talk about why you see that as such a pivotal thing in our lives.
Oh, you know, I was just thinking about this, and I've got an example from my own life, actually. One of the biggest reasons to be able to forgive and to focus on forgiveness within a family is to keep the relationships strong. Because you know what happens when you don't forgive, you have these little grudges, you have these little resentments, they build up, they create a sense of separation, they create barriers to communication. My example is when I was a kid, when I was an adolescent, I had some experiences with my mom, and she was very, very religious, and I was going through a time of rebellion. And she would kind of corner me and guilt me and, you know, use all these different tactics that she, you know, she believed were in my best interest, but were actually just creating a sense of guilt, resentment, anger towards her. And unfortunately, I didn't really know about forgiveness, even though I grew up in a religious family and I heard forgiveness talked about all the time. I didn't have it as anything more than a mental construct. I didn't really understand the emotional, the deeper levels of forgiveness, and I certainly didn't know how to do it. And so I ended up holding on to grudges against my mom for literally decades. And even though, you know, I came to a point of, when I was in my 20s, I did some personal development work, and I came to a point of acceptance. Okay, I can accept my mom, accept the different beliefs, accept these things that had happened. I still held on to this core of, you know, that was wrong, that was bad. She shouldn't have done that. She hurt me. And that created separation. It really strained the relationship between myself and my mother for years and years, decades actually. And unfortunately, I wasn't able to have the kind of loving, close relationship with her that I really would have liked to, until I was able to, in my 40s, find true forgiveness. And that's part of the reason that I do the forgiveness work now, is I just feel so strongly about families, people in families and relationships, being able to keep those strong.
So Cliff, this is really interesting to me. And I want to just take a step back for a second. I can tell by Judy's face, she's got questions too, but I'm sticking my nose in here first because I want to take just a minute and delve into this concept of forgiveness, because you hit on a couple things in there. You talked about acceptance versus forgiveness and the emotional side of it. I think we get preconceived notions on what forgiveness is. So I'd really love it if you could just give us a better understanding of what real forgiveness is.
Sure. Yeah, I love this. Thank you for that question. So there's an analogy I'd like to use for forgiveness, and I'll share that in just a moment. But I want to let you know that the misconceptions about forgiveness are probably the primary reason that I do the work that I do. If people really understood it, or at least understood what forgiveness is in the way I like to think about it and talk about it, I think that people would be much more open to and embracing the idea. Have you ever heard somebody say, "Oh, I'll never forgive that person"?
Oh yeah.
they're holding on to anger. They're holding on to resentment. They're really nurturing in that grudge. So to me, forgiveness is about letting go of all of that stuff. Forgiveness is needed whenever there's a negative judgment. Okay? This is a pretty sweeping statement, a pretty broad statement. Anytime that there's a negative judgment, that you're holding on to that was wrong, that was bad, it shouldn't have been that way towards yourself, towards anybody else, towards a situation, then there's something to forgive. And the analogy I like to use, and this actually came to me when I was co-teaching a class in a public building. We were in a community room of this teaching space, and I looked over and I saw this great big bulletin board. You know those bulletin boards that people have where they post photos, flyers, newsletters, articles, whatever else. And this was in a public community room, and so it was just really cluttered. There were all these things over it. There were stacks of things under, you know, stacks of things hanging off. There are individual items hanging off. There are all different sizes and shapes. And it occurred to me that those are kind of representative of the negative emotions, the belief systems, the grudges, the resentments, all that stuff that we drag around as a result of a negative judgment.
Oh my gosh. The
negative judgment itself is like that push pin, and then you are the cork board or the bulletin board. Mm-hmm. And so if you go up to that bulletin board, if I were to go up there and pull one of the push pins out, what would happen to the stuff underneath it?
Yeah, it all falls down.
It falls away. Mm-hmm. So the only thing that holds in place the anger, the resentment, the self-loathing, the guilt, whatever it is, the shame, is some negative judgment that you have about that event or experience or person. Does that make sense?
Yes. I love that visual, Cliff, because it helps me kind of self-identify with those issues and things like that. And I'm going to kind of open it up to the teen side of it, if I can, just for a second before we delve into what we can do about it. Because you shared in the beginning that you held that grudge and, you know, you put that push pin into the feelings that you had at home.
And I dragged them around with me.
Yeah. How did that show up in your teen years? Like how, if you were a parent listening to the show and you're curious if your child is struggling with some of this stuff or you're struggling, how did that show up in your life?
I closed down, especially with my mother. I would not communicate well, honestly, with her, certainly. I was always withholding. I always felt a little bit protected or on guard around her. I tried to avoid her particularly avoid being in situations alone with her where I was afraid that she might, you know, again, guilt me or whatever it was, whatever tactics you might be using. And so it really, as I said, it's strain. It created a separation. It created a barrier to communication. I no longer trusted her because Well, I no longer trusted her with some things. Of course, I trusted her to drive or provide food, but I no longer really trusted her with my emotional world and with the true feelings that I was having and the experiences that I was going through.
That's amazing. I love that.
That is interesting. And so, you know, going with Judy's thought there about, so if we're a parent and we have a teen in our house who is, seems to be that pushing away from us, closing down, not talking to us, avoiding us, this is something we can ask ourselves, is to try and take a step back and take an honest look at our relationship, and then maybe ask them, say, I'm wondering if I'm doing anything that's hurting you or making you feel bad about yourself. Would that be a reasonable direction to go with that, Cliff?
Yeah, that absolutely could. One of the keys is to be able to open up the communication with vulnerability. You know, as a parent, and I've actually never been a parent, but as a parent, to be able to go in and, as you said, step back a little bit, step out of the authority, you must do this because, or I'm right, you're wrong. You know, step out of that game entirely and just come in with some vulnerability. Hey, look, what's going on here? You know, I'm sensing, I'm feeling something. And as you said, am I doing something? Is there something that you don't like about what I'm doing, or that feels guilting or like shaming? Shame is one of the biggest drivers of behavior. As human beings, we'll do almost anything we can to avoid the feeling of shame. Have you ever noticed that?
Oh my gosh.
Oh yeah, yes. And it's such a tool used in our society to try to get people to do things.
Right, guilt and shame. Those are two of the primary tools of parenthood, right?
Sadly, yes.
And that's why we're doing this show, so we can make sure we as parents don't do that anymore, Cliff. I love it.
Right, yeah, and so as a parent, you might even come in and say, hey, is there anything I've been doing that has been this has felt shameful or shaming to you?
Oh, I love this because, so here's this big opening. Hey, I listened to this podcast and I don't know if this applies to us. I would hate to think I'm hurting you this way. So is, like you just said, is there anything I'm doing that's guilting or shaming you? Oh, I love that.
Well, that feels guilting or shaming.
Okay.
That is so powerful. I want you to say that again, Cliff. So it's, what is the words for a parent to say?
Is there anything that I'm doing? Is there anything in my behavior or interactions with you that feels guilting or shaming to you, or causes you to, or has you respond with guilt or shame, or feel guilt or shame?
So I'm going to take it to that next place. And if they come to you and they say, yes, it is, you know, this is what you're doing that is making me feel that way. Mm-hmm. We want to have them forgive us, correct?
Yes. And you also want to come to a new agreement.
And forgive ourselves.
And forgive yourself. Yes.
That's going to be tough.
And what does that entail? I need details here. I'm sitting here on the edge of my seat going, I get this and everything. And I want to know, you know, I self-identify in places like that in my life. So how can I forgive someone else or they forgive me? It's real easy to say, I forgive you and move on. That's my motto. I mean, that's what I do. And there is still that niggling thing inside that I'm not so sure if I really do. So,
well, and I say, before you tell us how to do it, Cliff, real quickly, I know in your handbook, which I love, you have a big, huge list of, if you are experiencing these things, can you maybe give us a few things from that list that can give us that indication that we need to do real forgiveness around something, not that surface, I'm sorry and I forgive you?
Yeah, if you're experiencing any kind of sense of resentment or anger towards a person or about a situation, if you're feeling like there's a barrier to communication, like you're unable or unwilling to be completely open and honest with a person, that's a sign that there's some forgiveness that's needed. If you're feeling guilty of yourself, It might be some self-forgiveness that's needed. If you're feeling guilty about your actions or have any sense of real regret, you know, I wish I hadn't or I shouldn't have done that. If you're experiencing just a niggling sense of stress or anxiety around somebody, it's an indication there's some negative judgment or something going on that needs some attention and likely some forgiveness. That's just a small handful of them.
Yeah, I know it's way too long and we'll run out of time if we try and do them all. But so if we're feeling any of these things, then that's a sign that we need to forgive ourselves or someone else. So now, Judy, back to your question. How do we do that? How do we get that? You talked about, you know, there's the emotional side of forgiveness. There's more than just this surface thing, like Judy asked. How do we really do this and get rid of all of it?
Yeah, it does have to happen at an emotional level. And, you know, our minds are really good at rationalizing our minds were really good at, as you said, Judy, saying, oh, I forgive you and moving on, but there's still that negative resentment or that negative judgment. And again, it's the negative judgment that holds everything else in place. So you can say I've forgiven you, but still have that barrier up, still be in the state of non-forgiveness. So to forgive, what you need to do is shift that negative judgment from a negative to a neutral, at least a neutral, or preferably a positive. You need to remove that negative judgment, remove that pushpin. There are a couple ways to do that.
Within how do you do that?
Yeah. Within families, one of the great places to start is just to have some compassion and put yourself in the other person's shoes. Because if I'm a kid and my mom would have come to me and said, hey, you know, I'm just concerned and, you know, I don't really know what I'm doing here. I'm sorry if I've been doing something that's been causing you to feel shame or guilt. What can we do differently? Now, if I hear that, that would have had a major difference in what was going on. Just to hear my mom say, I'm sorry. No, please forgive me. And what can we do differently going forward? Because if she was going to continue doing the same behavior moving ahead, then I couldn't forgive her because I'd still have that negative judgment. Oh, she shouldn't be doing this.
Okay.
So yeah, I just that. The compassion, being able to step into the situation of another person. If I could understand as a kid that my mom was fallible and that she really didn't know everything, you know, how to do everything, that she really didn't know what was she doing and she was just trying the best she could and that she loved me very, very much, then that would have made a difference.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, Cliff, what you're saying is that that first piece in the to improve relationships with our kids is really and truly to have that communication where you are not infallible, that you come clean with where you're at and ask them how your behavior is affecting them, essentially.
Yeah, and I'd like to add one qualification of that. And I think as a parent, maybe the first step is to put yourself into the shoes of the kid. Okay. If I were my daughter or I were my son and I came to them with this tone and with these words and this kind of situation, how would that feel?
Interesting.
And really get into their minds, because then once you get into their perspective and can see it from their side, then you can craft your, and I say craft, you can really formulate your conversation much more effectively. Because you're coming with compassion and understanding of what the experience is like over there. And when you can do that, then the kid can receive the communication much more effectively because you're right there with them. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it really does make sense. And that just gave me this big, huge sigh of relief as a parent that I don't have to be perfect because I can forgive myself for my imperfections and be open to listening to my child, especially as they get older and are becoming their own person and finding who they are outside of the family unit, That is such a powerful thing you just shared, Cliff, because to be able to put myself in their shoes isn't something that comes so naturally or so easily.
No, as humans, it's not. You know, we're always looking for from our own perspective. And I think it's so important to be able to admit your failings as a parent and admit your humanity as a parent, because then you're actually training your kid to do the same thing. If you try to be perfect and you struggle to be perfect and you don't admit that you're when you're wrong or that you've screwed up or whatever, the kid is going to learn from your actions, oh, I've got to be perfect too. And they're going to end up with the same neuroses and the same anxieties and everything else that you have, and they're going to just pass it on and pass it on. So through being willing to be vulnerable and say, hey, I screwed up there. I'm sorry. I'm not perfect. You're teaching them that it's okay not to be perfect as a human being, because let's face it, nobody's ever going to be perfect as a human being.
Right. And so I'm envisioning this. And what I have a question, I guess, is, so, you know, I go to my kid and I do this and I say, hey, you know, I'm not perfect. I made a mistake. Please forgive me. What's that kind of next step for them? Or if we're forgiving ourselves, because what I can see is that's that place where you skip something, you know, where you go, okay, I forgive you, but it's not hitting that emotional level, or, okay, I'll forgive myself for that, but we don't really do it. I'm feeling like we're missing a step there.
Yeah. And so really the key to shifting the negative judgment is to take that negative situation, that painful situation, and extract some value or wisdom from it. And so in my own forgiveness process, if I'm looking, well, let's start with interpretations. Let's understand that as human beings, we're always making interpretations about things. We're interpreting events typically as good, bad, right, wrong, because that's the filter that we learn in our society. Oh, that was bad behavior. You were wrong there. And so we make up all these, and we interpret the situations and the behaviors of others as being right, wrong, good, bad, very often, instead of just being, oh, that's what they did now, or effective, not effective. So what we need to do to be able to remove that pushpin is to interpret the situation in a different way and to be able to extract some value or wisdom. So again, getting back to my situation with my mom, and this wouldn't have worked. This one was really only a hindsight kind of thing. But what allowed me to actually forgive my mother completely when I was in my 40s is that for a long time I'd held on to this notion that, hey, my life turned out pretty good in spite of my mom.
Yeah.
Okay, you ever feel like that about your parents?
Or even because of sometimes,
well,
right?
Well, no, and that was the shift, actually. The shift for me was when I realized, no, it wasn't in spite of. My life turned out really the way it is right now because of. Mm-hmm. Because of the way that she interacted with me, because of the meanings I made about our relationship when I was a kid, it caused me to go off and to start exploring religion and philosophy and theology and psychology and all this stuff that propelled me into the business and into the work that I do today. And so without my mother having done that, and really, at some level, sacrificed her relationship with me for years, I wouldn't have become the person that I love today.
Mm-hmm. That's really very helpful, Cliff. And unfortunately, we are out of time. So I just want to make sure that we've kind of got your main concept here. So
can I add one more thing?
Sure.
That might be helpful for parents.
Yeah.
In that conversation, the missing step that you said is to be able to sit down with the kid then and say, okay, what can we both learn out of this?
Ah, okay.
What can we both learn?
Thank you.
Because that allows you then to take that situation that was a negative, it was painful, extract some value from it, and then be able to move forward.
Well, and that is the time and the space that I think they would need to be able to sit with that new emotional place and to see us acting out what we just said. We said, you know, we're fallible and we're sorry, but now we're showing them. We're trying to make it better. So that I love.
And it's not just a one-time conversation, I don't think. It is that opening up of the opportunity to have a continued new dialogue that shifts and grows with the relationship as that forgiveness is actually embraced and ingrained.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I can even see, you know, having a household done, you move toward a household where the kid can say, hey, mom, that makes me feel guilty. And so we can start learning how they interpret things, because we've talked about that before. It doesn't matter what our intention is. It's only how they're interpreting it. And we need to understand and dialogue around that.
Exactly. Or that tone of voice feels shaming to me.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. I love it. Well, I know, Sandy, I am going to make you give us the quick wrap up because I'm the timekeeper of the box today. So,
all right. So forgiveness is important because it keeps our relationship strong. And some signs that we can look for to know as a parent, if we're in a situation where we've done things that our teen needs to forgive us for, is they could be closing down, on guard, or avoiding or not communicating with us. And all of this leads to not trusting us. To approach them about it, we can start with questions like, is there anything I'm doing that makes you feel guilty or shameful? Anything that just feels guilty or shaming to you? And then what we can do is help them, you know, we need to admit we're fallible and apologize for what we did, and then help them to shift the negative judgment that they have about the situation, whether we can shift it to a positive or at least first get it to a neutral and then go to a positive. And Cliff, you told us that we can do that through having compassion, putting ourselves in someone else's shoes, and then taking that painful situation and extracting value from it by asking them, sitting down and saying, hey, what can we both learn out of this?
Yeah, that's a pretty good summary.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Cliff, for sharing that with us. It was really, really awesome. For people who are listening to this and go, I need more, where can they find you?
They can find more on me at cliffordedwards.com. Can also pick up a copy of the book, The Forgiveness Handbook by Clifford Edwards on Amazon. And cliffordedwards.com will get you links, get you other information.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Cliff. This has been such a valuable 25 minutes. I can't even begin to tell you. And I thank you for being here. And now it's time to dig into real talk right after this quick message.
Parenting is the toughest job you'll ever love. It's a common phrase because it's so true. And as the teen years roll around and you start seeing changes in your child, and you may start wondering, what's going on? Are they okay? Is this normal? And again, as they move out of the house, go out on their own, go off to college, you see more changes. And sometimes the changes are perfectly normal. And sometimes they're an indication that your child's in over their head, that there are things going on that they can't handle. And the parents' worry and their concern is, how do I know the difference? Well, now there's a book that can tell you. It's Warning Signs, and it is a parenting guide to help you understand about those changes and to help you figure out if your child could be at risk for depression, addiction, or suicide. The book will take you by the hand, walk you through that understanding, give you the confidence to be able to take the next step, to have a conversation or whatever it is that you need to do, and to give you some idea on some of the paths that you can follow. You can go to dasium.net to the store in the shop there and get your own copy. Okay, now it is time for real talk. And again, I got to pick the topic. This is something, Judy, I wanted to talk about. I've talked about this with moms for years. And it's one of the things that when I do a talk or I do a presentation that really seems to hit moms in the heart. And it's this idea of comparing ourselves to other people. The real problem comes in is that, you know, we think we have to be super mom because we look around us and we look at these other moms and we go, oh my gosh, she's got it all together. She's so organized. Her kids are so amazing. And there are two pieces to this that I see us basically screw up. And one is, if you just heard, I just did it. This mom has this piece all together. That mom has that piece all together. This mom has that piece all together. Or this dad is so amazing at you know, this sport. Or this dad is so amazing with his kids. This dad takes his kids to school every day. You know, we take that one thing, this bunch of, you know, this person's one thing and that person's one thing and that person's one thing. And we think we need to do all those things perfectly ourselves. And the second thing that we goof up in there is we take our real life, all the mess behind the cupboard doors and how we're feeling inside and knowing whether we actually washed and blow dried and did our hair this morning or if we didn't have time for all that and we just, you know, it looks fine, but, you know, we don't feel great about it, right? And then we look at the person next door, the person in the pickup line or the person in the cubicle next to us, and we just look at them and go, oh my gosh, again, they have it so together. So we take like our whole life and all of our mess and we compare it to someone else's snapshot, or we go on their social media, which is the highlight reel of, you know, what's good in their life. And we compare our frustrations and our downfalls to someone else's high points. I mean, and I know I've done it. Do you do that?
Yeah. And it's so funny that you say that. Just yesterday, I had the most interesting experience. There was a fellow military spouse who had wanted to talk to me about possibly coming and talking at her base. And I didn't realize that we were going to be doing it on a video type of a call. So all of a sudden, she calls me with Skype, I think it was, and it pops up on my phone and I answered it not realizing that it was video. And, you know, here I am in my yoga pants and my hair was in a little, you know, something in a ponytail, no makeup, whatever. I was literally on my couch with my computer in my lap and everything with my tissue box and my water and all the stuff. And she got on the and busted out laughing. And I'm like, what's so funny? And she goes, I can't tell you how happy it is to see. I've thought of you as this superstar, unreal person for so long because of all the things and all the hats you wear. And to see that you're a real person is so refreshing. And in that moment, I realized that everything that you're saying, I do it every day. Mm-hmm. Without thinking that other people are thinking that about me.
Yeah, we can't imagine how someone could think that about us.
Exactly, because I'm such a hot mess 90% of the time. But it is that whole thing that technology and social media and even just, like you said, walking outside our front door and getting that snapshot moment of somebody totally decked out to the nines and us were got garbage in one hand and the dog in the other, you know? And we look at it and say, why aren't we more like Susie Q?
Yeah.
Why do they have it so much easier than I do? So I have a question for you. So we've set this little stage and one, it's human nature to compare ourselves, but I really truly believe that it is detrimental to our ability to have healthy, real relationships with people that we can have be such a great support system. So how do we go from this place where we judge ourselves against everyone else and compare to a place where we can be open and real enough that we can become true friends and support each other in the good, the bad, and the ugly?
Yeah, one actually really simple thing is to bring it up to someone. If this is someone, because you're talking about someone you want to become friends with. So if this is the neighbor or the coworker, I think giving them a compliment and saying, you know, you always look so amazing, like so put together when I see you leaving for work in the morning, or you handle the, maybe it's your, you know, the parent next to you in a cubicle and she's like, hey, John, you handle those personal emergencies so well. Your work-life balance is amazing. And just giving that compliment works, because what happens is most of the time they're going to laugh like you did when this person said, oh, Judy, you're just so incredible. And you're like, no, I'm a hot mess. And so that's what happens, is that they'll give you a peek behind the curtain.
Mm-hmm.
And that starts to, one, let you let go of the thoughts that you had. And two, if what you want is to move toward a friendship, then that's starting to create some level of emotional connection. I mean, that's just that very superficial, you know, first
right.
level, but.
Yeah, it's that real connection, I think. And I think in general, in our society, that's what's really missing.
Personal connection.
True, real connection, where I just want a friend. You know, you and I have been friends for goodness, almost 30 years or so.
Yeah.
But I just want a friend like you that if I get on video with you and my hair is sticking up, you're going to go, wow, you look like alfalfa today. And it's all right. Because I know you're not judging that. You're just making a comment. And I can just truly be myself. And I think as a society, we've gotten so far away from allowing ourselves to be not perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Out, you know, the persona we put out to the world doesn't have to be perfect, because God forbid someone would take a picture and upload it for the world to see.
Yeah.
And I know that you've talked about how this plays out in our kids. How does that do that?
Yeah. Well, a couple of things. One is they're going to do what they see.
Yep.
So when they see you doing that, they mimic it. I mean, as human beings, that's how our brain functions, is we are born mimicking people, which is how we learn to do everything, is how we learn to walk and talk and function in our societies. So it serves us in many ways. And as parents, we can let that instinct serve us by demonstrating a better way of handling this. You know, demonstrating that to our kids. And it, again, you have to kind of verbalize it. You know, you might say, you know, I've always looked at the neighbors as they go to work in the morning and thought, they're so together, what's wrong with me? And then I just stopped and went, wait, there's nothing wrong with me.
Right.
That's great. You know, they are put together when they go to work in the morning. I'm glad for them that they're not going to work with ketchup stains on their shirt or peanut butter and jelly handprints on their back. And what I'm doing is fine. Or telling our kids, hey, you know, it was so funny because what was it? I said, John at work, you know, I always thought that he had that work-life balance down so much better than I do. I mean, you guys see me struggling with it and I thought he had it perfect. And I told him that today and he just laughed. And share this as a story, not a preaching moment, just share it as a story kind of a thing. The other thing we can do for our kids is point it out to them when they do it, in a loving way, not judging, going, you're doing that again.
Just, right.
You know, I noticed that you were really happy and now all of a sudden you're really sad. What happened?
Mm-hmm.
Or I noticed that when you looked at, you know, when you looked at Jerry's Facebook page, or when you saw Jerry drive down the street or whatever, I noticed that your mood changed.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on? And it just kind of calls their attention to it. You don't even need to make a big deal out of it or anything.
Right.
But let them be aware that that's happening.
Right. So, and let's model it. Let's,
yeah.
Let's let go of having to be perfect and comparing. And if we can model that for our kids and stop comparing our real life to the snapshot, we can all be a lot less stressful and quit worrying about all the stuff that's inconsequential. And I know we could talk about this topic till the cows come home.
Because when you said that last piece, the best way I've ever heard it expressed from someone is comparing your real life to someone else's highlight reel.
Right.
And that's something that I've done, where I make a joke about that with my kids. So then when it comes up later, we can go highlight reel, you know, and you can kind of be funny about it.
Exactly. So wrap us up, Sandy. Take us away.
Okay. So again, thank you for joining us on Mighty Parenting. This is, depending whether you're listening to the podcast or watching Real Talk on YouTube, you might have gotten the whole podcast or part of it, but you can get all of our podcasts at mightyparentingpodcast.com. And we are now live on iTunes. So yay, we're on iTunes and Stitcher. Right. So if you use either of those, feel free to listen there. We ask you to please rate the show, leave us a review. We want to know what you think. We want to know how the show is working for you. And that's one way for us to find out about that. So do that for us. Go to mightyparentingpodcast.com. And when you're at mightyparentingpodcast.com, you know, you can get more resources and things in the show posts. Also, you can put in your email to get notifications every time a show goes live, and you get a nice little inspirational bookmark from Judy and myself. Just yep. Something to lift you up as you go through your parenting journey.
And for goodness sake, do not forget to join us in our Facebook group, the Mighty Parenting yes. Facebook group.
We are growing and having fun.
Yes, and we're asking and answering questions, and we are having conversations sometimes about topics we talk about on the show or current events and things going on. So until next time, that's Sandy Fowler, and I'm Judy Davis, or maybe she's up there or down there. I'm not sure where she is, but we want to help you become a mighty parent. Thanks for joining us.